So this evening, as I mentioned, we're thinking about this idea of grace and truth. If you were here last Sunday evening, you would know that we spent time thinking about what Luke said at the beginning of the book of Acts, where he talked about Jesus coming to do and to teach. And we thought about the significance of that order, doing and teaching. And we saw how Luke, as he writes his gospel, shows that Jesus spends a lot of time doing and demonstrating and modelling behaviour before he tries to teach his disciples as to what it all means. And we thought about some of the questions that that raised for us as we think about what it means to be a follower of Jesus and what it means to try and encourage others to come and follow him as well. And this evening, we're doing something similar. But instead of thinking about doing and teaching, we're thinking about this idea of Jesus that we find in John's Gospel that Sue read to us, this idea of Jesus being full of grace and truth. And so very similar questions. Why does John put them in that order? Is it significant? What does it tell us? It's possible that the order doesn't mean anything at all, that it's coincidence. You have to put one word before the other. But I think there is some significance in that, and we're going to explore it together this evening. So what does John mean when he says that we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth? He's reflecting on the amazing reality that God's Son was sent by the Father into the world to live amongst us, to be one of us, to take on humanity for himself. The Son of God, who had been with the Father, who had been with the Spirit for eternity, chooses to become human. And many things could have been said about Jesus at the start of the gospel. It could have been his love could have been referred to, his sacrifice could have been referred to, his care and compassion. But the words that John chooses to speak about, of Jesus being full of, are grace and truth. If we read in Luke 5:12, we'd find that Jesus meets a leper who is described as being covered with leprosy. If you saw that man, if you looked at that man, the signs of leprosy would have been obvious. You could not have missed it. It would have been the first thing you would have seen about this man and would have affected everything you thought about him and how you engaged with him. Before you thought about anything else, you would have thought, he's a leper. He's full of leprosy. And that means I've got to be very careful. That means that the way in which I engage with him, I've got to think about a lot. And that word, covered, is the same word that is used here to speak about Jesus being full of grace and truth. And I think just as that leprosy would have been obvious to people when they saw the leper, I think it would have been obvious to people when they met Jesus that here is somebody who exudes grace and truth in all that he does. Maybe the first thing they recognised about him, certainly something that would have influenced how people thought about him. And I think one of the reasons why the words are put in this order is that they express how people experienced Jesus. That they experienced grace from him before they came under his truth. Yes, truth was very apparent as Jesus taught, as he reasoned, as he guided, as he spoke out strongly against what was wrong. But grace came first. That desire to reach out to bless, to offer God's goodness to those who didn't deserve it. This was why he had come. This was what he demonstrated. One of the things that surprised me thinking about this, that for something that, according to John here, was so central in the life of Jesus, grace is not a word that we find much in the Gospels. I can find just 5 references to grace or gracious, and in each case they are used in relationship to Jesus. In Luke 2, when speaking about the young Jesus as he grew, it says that God's grace was on him as he grew. In Luke 4, verse 22, as he launches his public ministry, as he stands up in that synagogue in Nazareth and speaks words, people are amazed, it says, at the gracious words coming from his lips. And the other 3 times where grace is mentioned in the Gospels are in the reading that Sue read to us earlier. So they're not words that we come across often, but they are demonstrated on every page in the Gospels. Jesus demonstrated time and time again in his ministry and how he engages with people. Some examples. Luke 15 tells us that he was accused, and rightly accused, of welcoming sinners and eating with them. He was prepared to go to those whom society said you steered away from, but to demonstrate God's grace. His relationship with Zacchaeus, that tax collector, started with Jesus noticing him, speaking kindly to him, acting graciously towards him, and resulted in Zacchaeus repenting and turning to a new lifestyle. To a woman, we find later in John's Gospel, chapter 11, to a woman caught in the act of adultery, he says he does not condemn her, but he calls her to go and leave her life of sin. Grace followed by truth. On the cross, Luke tells us that Jesus calls out to God to forgive those who are nailing him there. He demonstrates grace even in that moment of extremity. When Jesus says to Thomas in John chapter 14 that he was the way, the truth, and the life, he had just demonstrated his loving grace to Thomas and to the rest of the disciples by washing their feet. And we get the sense that before confronting people with truth, Jesus normally comes to them in grace. He has truth that he wants them to hear, to understand, to cause change in their lives. But he starts by showing them grace, showing that he cares, showing they are valued, showing they are loved. You could say that the actions of Jesus in the temple, when he threw out the money changers and the people who were trading in animals, did not demonstrate much grace. And maybe there are times when grace isn't going to get through to people and truth is all that is left. But the normal pattern of the life of Jesus seems to be to extend grace and to then speak truth in powerful and life-changing ways. And the question that raises for us is whether or not we behave in the same way. But before we do that, let's look in a bit more detail at what John actually says are the implications to us of Jesus coming to earth full of grace and truth. And the first thing we see in verses 16 and 17 is that because of the fullness of grace that he experienced, that he came in him, and that because that flows from him, we in turn have received grace. Out of his fullness, we have all received grace. And it's interesting that while in verse 14 it talks about grace and truth, full of grace and truth, in verse 16 it's just talking about grace. It's not that we don't find and receive ultimate truth in Jesus, we do. But the emphasis here at the beginning of the gospel is on the grace we receive from him. And it speaks about receiving grace in place of grace already given. This is a very strange and difficult phrase to translate. And different translators have different goes at trying to communicate what it's trying to say. And they don't really agree. You have these examples. So the version that Sue read has grace in place of grace already given. The New Revised Standard Version says grace upon grace. The earlier translation of the NIV has one blessing after another. The Authorized Version started all this off by grace for grace. And there's lots and lots of stuff written about what it actually means. I like the translation that Sue read, grace in place of grace already given. I think this captures the idea well. As it's, what it's trying to say is that what Jesus has done is come to replace what Moses had done for the people of God, for what God had given his people through Moses, which of course was the law. It goes on to say the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. But the fact that this is refers to grace already given says that there was something gracious in God giving the law in the first place. And that's because God is a gracious God. In Exodus, we find these words, God speaking about himself to Moses and saying, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. This law that God gave to Moses was given to a group of people who had already experienced God's grace in rescuing them from Egypt and recognizing them as his special people. God saying to them, you are my people. And he graciously gave them this law so that they would know how to live as rescued, redeemed people of God. And the law that gave them a way of restoring relationship with that God when it was broken through sin. So here, I think what John is doing is recognizing that the law that was given through Moses was an act of grace. But he's also recognizing that we see the full revelation of God's grace and truth in the person of his Son, Jesus Christ. And it's through the fullness seen in Jesus that we receive this grace and truth. And a question this raises is, how should we, as followers of Jesus, model our behaviour on the gracious and truthful life of Christ? I want to suggest that there are three different approaches to this, and that only one of them is right. But we can easily find ourselves adopting the others. See if you recognise any of these. There's the approach of grace and no truth. There's the approach of truth and no grace. And there's the approach of grace and truth in right balance. Let's think about them. So grace and truth, grace and no truth, rather. This is something that many of us probably find quite easy. It involves being nice to people. It involves extending love and friendship to people. It's about being there for them. It's supporting them. It's showing that we care. It does not involve confrontation or pointing out things that are wrong. And I think we find examples of this in the churches written to in Revelation. Jesus says to the church in Thyatira that they tolerate that woman Jezebel, who by her false teaching was leading people astray. And you get the sense that the church was demonstrating grace, but not standing up for truth. And I think this is a very real challenge and problem for the church in our country today. That we want to appear, and we want to be welcoming to people. And find confronting them with truth can be difficult. It might be truth about God, truth about humanity, truth about sin and judgment, truth about things that are wrong in their lives. It's a lot easier to demonstrate grace at the beginning and to leave truth for later, which can end up being never. I remember a time in a previous church when I and one of the other deacons, I was, I think, maybe church secretary at the time, we had to go and meet another church member and challenge him about the way he was behaving and what he was saying. It was not easy. It was not something he received well. It wasn't something any of us enjoyed. But with the responsibility to stand up for truth, it was something we had to do. But it was important to have a grace-fueled relationship with this person first. Because that allows us to say things with right desires and motives and love for the other person. A context in which what we have to say might be received well. There's no guarantees. It demonstrates that we care for the individual, even if we believe that what they are doing or saying is wrong. So leaving truth forever actually, at the end of the day, does not help people. Because God calls us to be changed. So grace and no truth. Well, there's the truth and no grace model. And some people find this very easy. Some people find this their natural way of working. We know what is right. We know when people do wrong. We believe it's important that they are put straight and we are the people to do it. So we speak truth into their lives. The first thing, it's important that we are sure that we are speaking truth. Not just our own ideas. But even then, I think this approach of truth outside of a context of grace, I'm not sure it really works. I've had people come up to me wanting to point out things that are wrong, to correct something that I am doing. And my first response, at least certainly in my thoughts, is, why do you think you have the right to tell me what to do? There is no relationship. There is no context of grace, no context of love, of friendship. Just a desire to share some necessary truth. I'm not speaking about anybody in our church, okay? This is just something that has happened in other places. An example of truth and no grace, I think, would be the dreams that Joseph, the young son of Jacob, had and what he did with them. We read about this in Genesis 37. And you may remember that Joseph, he had two dreams. And in those dreams, he first of all saw his brothers coming and bowing down and worshipping him. And then later he saw his parents joining them and doing the same. And he goes and tells them. Now, as the story develops, we actually see that this becomes true. So there was truth in it. But it was not received well. It did not start from a good place. His brothers were jealous of the preferential treatment his father was giving to him. They hated him. So there was no possibility of them listening to him and accepting what he was saying. It is vitally important that we are prepared to speak truth to each other and to those we are seeking to introduce to Jesus. But if we try and do that outside of a relationship of grace, I don't think that normally we're going to achieve any positive results. So, this last model, grace and truth in the right balance, where we demonstrate both of them in the right order, in the right proportion, where we start by demonstrating grace to each other. We show that we love. We show that we care. We show we have their best interests at heart. And from that position, we speak truth to each other with a deep desire to see that person grow in their relationship with Jesus and become more like him. And I mentioned earlier, we see a great example of that in the life of Jesus. where he speaks to a sinful woman about no condemnation, words of grace, but also of the need for change, words of truth. Neither do I condemn you, Jesus declared. Go now and leave your life of sin. If you want to speak truth into people's lives, and it is vitally important that we do, then we need to be continually cultivating a context of grace in which to do so. And this is not a one-off. We can't demonstrate grace to somebody one day and then, based on that, spend the next 3 years focused on truth. There's an ongoing need to restock on grace so that it's always fresh. Just as we can only drive so far in a car before having to fill it up again with fuel. If someone acts graciously towards me, I appreciate it. But if that last happened a month ago, and now they suddenly want to speak truth, which often in this context is challenging some sort of behaviour, I might resist it. But if before speaking truth, they're able to demonstrate their love, their care, their grace towards me today, then I'm much more likely to be receptive to what they have to say. And this is something I need to be reminded of. We were driving back from a wedding a week or so ago, and Joe said to me, "You know when you said what you said to that person, it didn't really come across very well." And she was right. And I needed to be reminded that I'd got that balance at that moment wrong. There were many times Jesus needed to speak into the lives of his first followers. He needed to speak truth into their lives. Sometimes as he was trying to get them to understand something important about God. Sometimes as he was trying to get them to understand something about himself. Sometimes as he was trying to get them to understand something important about themselves. Sometimes as he needed to criticize and challenge their behavior. But each day, he would have been demonstrating grace and love to them. And from that place, and from within that context, he spoke truth. Grace and truth are vitally important. We need them. The people we engage with need them. The world needs them. But I want to leave you with three suggestions as to why having them in the right balance and in the right order are important. Firstly, we see this in the life of Jesus. And as his followers, we are expected to follow his example. Jesus did it. We should do it. Secondly, it is important in terms of our relationships with each other. As fellow disciples, as fellow followers of Jesus, we are all from time to time battered and bruised by the world we live in, the challenges we face, the things we go through. And knowing that we can experience and share grace with each other is a real blessing. But we also need to be prepared from that position to lovingly speak truth into each other's lives when necessary and appropriate. Thirdly, it's important in terms of how we engage with those who don't yet know Jesus. They need to experience and feel God's love, to know the grace that Jesus came to bring. And we may be the only people who can demonstrate that to them. But if they are to come to know Jesus for themselves, they also need to hear the truth about the sin and the need for forgiveness. And they're going to hear it better in the context of a grace-fueled relationship. So three reasons why it's important. We probably each have a default approach to this. Maybe some of us are more biased towards grace. Maybe some are more biased towards truth. But how will the example of Jesus, the one who came full of grace and truth, change us and the way in which we engage with others as we seek to live as his disciples and we seek to encourage others to become disciples too. We're going to take a few moments of quiet just to think about, to reflect on that question, to think maybe about the way we normally engage with people. Where are we on that balance? More grace, more truth? Do we think we've got it right? Do we think we're following the example of Jesus? Do you think we're being to each other what we need each other to be? Are we demonstrating this helpfully in the way in which we engage with others who don't yet know Jesus? An opportunity for each of us to think about those questions and maybe to come to God and ask for his forgiveness and for his help and for his guidance if we recognise that we get it wrong sometimes, which we might. Let's be quiet before God for a few moments.